Yo.
I can do that, you know, that old rerun. You know what I mean? Put a wave up in this thing.
You doing the Breaking Two Electric Boogaloo. You got to go back to Jerry Carroll days, Pastor Jeff.
Yes, sir, man. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing excellent, man. How are you doing?
Man, you know, my Browns won, so you know what I mean? It's you know, it's all love, baby. I'm sitting here.
Go ahead.
You know, just
y'all deserve it.
Sweating a little bit. Hey, I'll sweat a little bit, but
I'll be wiping that somewhere else next week.
Wiping it on y'all, brother. Wiping it on y'all.
In the meantime, we're still 4-0.
I hear you. 4-0.
Hey, you know what? I mean, I'm actually glad. This is the way rivalries are supposed to be.
Right. Usually y'all 4-0 and we like 0-4. So and we just happy to beat y'all. That is our
game. Y'all 0-40. Y'all be losing games you didn't even play.
How you lose on your week off?
Right.
Our week.
Good evening to everybody joining us. You know we are already clowning from the get-go. Welcome to Religiously Incorrect. It's Sunday, October 11th, and Pastor Jeff and I are here to once again chop it up.
Yes, sir.
Be sure to like and share this video. Tag somebody because the subject matter tonight is going to be amazing. We have an incredible guest with us tonight, and we can't wait to bring them on and talk to you. So, hey, say hi. If you're watching this right now, I see we're up to about 13 viewers. That's about 11 more than we usually get. I started creating fake accounts and commenting, you know, myself. So good to see everybody. Again, share. Hit the little share button. Hit the like button. Hit the hearts on what you're saying. What's up, Alex? Good to see you. So good to see you. We'll see you. God bless you. You had a birthday recently. That's one of my members. Happy birthday to your sister, Josie. Darnell Bryant, good to see you. Thanks for tapping in. We are really appreciative of everyone coming in. You all know we always chop it up at the beginning. So, Pastor Tatum Osborne, my Berean sister.
She done became my sister. And I don't even know her yet. Amen.
You're going to get to know her because she's a preacher. Between her and her husband, Pastor Kevin Osborne from Brooklyn. They're amazing. And, you know, you would have been down in Berean with me this year. I know you would have tried to make a way. But I just want to say this before we jump into our subject matter. Bishop Clark preached his butt off both times on Wednesday. He did a one-man conference, and I got saved all over again. So
he did a one-man conference every Tuesday morning, though.
basically. So I'm saved for real now, y'all. So just in case you were wondering, I'm finally saved for real. I got two words for you, Pastor Jeff.
What is it?
The fly.
You know what? I'm going to be honest with you. I wasn't watching it because I was playing baseball. And listen, I was playing baseball and I caught a fly ball.
I bet you he wanted to fly away.
He was geared up, though. He was looking kind of fly, wasn't he?
He was looking real fly. Listen, I've never seen anything so surreal on a national stage like that. I mean,
it wasn't moving, though.
Right
there, just you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Somebody said it was laying eggs or something. I mean, I'm you know, it was nesting. I mean, you know, thankfully it wasn't the. And I got to use Christian words, even though I'm Baptist. Thankfully, it wasn't the garbage show we saw the week before.
Right. Well, but, for me, that could have been easily entitled "The Fly versus the Face."
You know what? She has some faces.
Yeah.
About 13 different faces, and every last one of them, every black person knows.
Right.
Every black person knows all of Kamala Harris's face. She had the mama faces, boy. She had them don't mess with me. Hey, listen, them are the type of faces, Jeff, we used to get when our mamas was in the choir stand.
Back
at the church.
Just look back at
listen. We will have a meeting after this.
I knew she was going to be thorough, though, getting off the plane with those combat boots on.
Oh, yeah. She was known as a soldier. She was ready to come out there.
Go in.
I was trying to check old BET videos to see if she was in some Master P videos I didn't know about. She was
No Limit Soldier.
Right. I didn't told you. Hey, Mary Morgan Hoke. So good to see you, A.L.A. Johnson. Good to see you. Keep on coming in. Hey, William Glenn is saying, what's up, Big Mike? You got a fan too. I don't even know how you got a fan. You don't even talk on here, Mike. And you got
because he outside. You know, everybody's fans.
I call that the doghouse now. I really do believe Mike's not allowed in the house. And that's why he's always outside. I don't know what he does every Sunday.
We gonna see when it get down to about zero.
Yeah.
We're gonna see if he's still out there talking about, hey, we're gonna start up real quick, y'all.
The icicles coming off his lip. Hey, it's real. But you know what? As always, I know Pastor Jeff concurs to all of our viewers, no matter your political affiliations. You all know we got some, but vote, vote, vote. Make your voice heard. Early vote. And don't be acting up, cutting a fool at the polls. Leave folk alone. You know, vote and go home. All these people out here intimidating folk and, you know, carrying on.
Yeah, please. And listen, I think it'll on the 25th, if you're voting, up here in Trumbull County, right around the corner at Progressive Baptist, we are feeding people who are voting.
Okay.
So come around, grab yourself a plate. I think we got Cap'n Crunch and Frosted Flakes.
Raven noodles.
No, I mean, I'm saying they're supposed to be doing it up. I don't know what all they're doing, but hey, I think it's just a good thing. Just another little initiative to get you out there to the polls, man. It's very important.
And it's nonpartisan as well, right, Pastor Jeff?
Absolutely. Yeah. So,
you know, if you come in – now again – you know, it's nonpartisan, but some of them old church mothers ain't gonna put up with the foolishness.
This is a Baptist church, so right. Just know what you're doing when you come in, amen.
I will pour a pot of hot grits on you if you.
I will put up my one finger and walk up to my office.
Let the deacons have their way.
I don't know what happened. I was in my office.
right, with the door locked.
Watch it on the video.
Hey, Jeff, we good in Baptist now. We know all the tricks.
Right.
We know all the tricks. Let them fight out there.
Pastor Harrison taught me well.
Yes, Mr. President.
Yes, we used to be up in his office watching all kind of stuff.
Listen, now don't make him come on here.
I'm sorry, Pastor Harrison. I'm telling you.
He's going to come on here. It's President's Week. It's Ohio Baptist State Convention Week. You can't be talking like that.
Right.
You got to be presidential. Hey, everybody, this is going to be a good show. The times we're living in dictate that we talk about things that are affecting our communities, the things that impact our lives. And we've already touched several times from our very uninformed yet highly opinionated views about justice, policing. We've talked everything from what should the church be doing or what is the church not doing to, you know, what's happening out there in the world. And we decided we might as well bring somebody who actually knows what they're talking about a little bit, you know, just a little bit, because we preachers. Preachers always think they know what they're talking about. Absolutely. We think we're experts in everything, which I am, by the way. I am.
I'm pretty close.
I have my certification. But but we have a special guest with us, dear friend of pretty much everybody, a dear friend of mine, stalwart in the Warren and Trumbull County, Mahoning Valley community. He is a pastor, a community advocate, and he also has worked in law enforcement for over 30 years. That means he's probably arrested your cousins. So,
aunties, butt, boo boo them.
There's a good chance Pookie and them have felt the ministry.
Right. You said he's a friend of everybody. It's a couple people he ain't friends with.
He got a few folk he ain't too friendly with, I'm sure. But I'm sure he knows how to handle himself. But I want everybody in the religiously incorrect nation to give it up for our friend and brother, Pastor Vincent Peterson. He's going to join us. Bring him in.
And God bless y'all, man. Y'all something else.
Hey, you got one chance to log out. You got one chance.
Y'all was something else.
How you doing, Pastor?
Man, I'm doing great. I cannot complain at all. See y'all brothers doing well.
Hey, amen. Thank you for being on with us tonight, man. We certainly appreciate it. We know how busy your schedule is, man, but we are appreciative of you taking the time out just to sit down here and chop it up with us, man. We ain't gonna hit you too hard for at least the first 3 minutes.
Right. Now the subject of our podcast this week is protect and serve.
Okay.
Protect and serve. Now Jeff had some other titles I want to inform you of.
I could only imagine.
I think it was pigs in a blanket.
What was it? What you say?
Pigs in a blanket. Dunkin' Donuts
5-0. Hey, Jeff, I know where that's coming from. I know where that's coming from.
No, Jeff is a title guy. Jeff is a title guy. He's the one always giving us titles.
Pigs in a blanket, miss.
Anyway,
I'm supposed to be sweating right now.
But when you talk about heavy stuff, man, you need to get a good laugh in. But no, seriously, we call it protect and serve. And we've said this multiple times, and I think it gets lost in the conversation that the vast majority of any well-reasoned, halfway decent, common sense person has respect for our law enforcement. We understand, like any other occupation, right, that there are flaws and faults that exist. But I grew up with a healthy respect for law enforcement. I teach my children to acknowledge men and women in uniform. We always pray for our safety forces and those who have to do the hard work. Yet, of course, our country has been in a constant cycle of protest and, you know, outrage. Some justified, some maybe not so much. Sometimes it gets out of control. Sometimes you're not even sure if everybody is really protesting anything of value, or if there's right. just, you know, hey, there's a parade, let me get my rock and take out that target.
On TV. Everybody want to be on Facebook.
Yeah, let me get these Jordans right quick while y'all protesting. Let me, right. So what would you've been at this for 30 plus years, past events. So I guess I'd start off with this, then I'll defer to Jeff.
Well, before you go, I just want to, because I don't want to mess Mike up, because this was Mike's thing, and right. it's protect and serve too.
Okay, protect and serve
that,
too.
That is that double meaning that as law enforcement, you protect and serve, and as a pastor, you also right. have to protect and serve. So we want right. to make sure that that's in there, and I mean, and we're going to talk about the duality of being a pastor and a police right. officer at the same time. But go ahead, finish. I just want to make sure I got that in there.
No, appreciate okay. it. Appreciate it. Sorry about that. So in your 30 years, Pastor Vince, do you think it has been as tense, the kind of displays of protest, the complaints, you know, obviously media and, you know, the new means of media we have obviously exasperated that. But do you think it's ever been this tense, this much of an outrage over your career?
Let me say, you know, past 33 years and having seen a ton of things, I've never, ever seen it to this level. I think probably one of the most intense, what I would call seasons, was during the introduction of the crack cocaine era. And because of all the things surrounding it, there were a lot of drug raids going on. There was some adversarial kind of relationships that were built up between police and the community, and not necessarily the community, more so the drug population. But to the sense of what I'm seeing now, I've never seen it like this. You know, it's just the whole conversation, the whole feeling almost feel adversarial. There's nothing that, you know, you're trying to bridge gaps and trying to communicate, and there really hasn't been a lot of room for communication and true dialogue. And mm-hmm. with that happening, the gulf seems to be getting wider. But never in my 33 years have I seen it to this degree.
Wow. Wow. That's good for context. It really is. Because some of us, you know, I mean, I'm just a little younger. I've only known what I've known. Last time I saw riots and protests, I mean, I grew up on, you know, Rodney King type stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that was my first experience. CNN and, you know, 24-hour news, you know, I used to always joke, that's about the time when 24-hour news really took off, the Gulf War, then Rodney King type stuff. And then, you know, we haven't seen a sustained, right. consistent cycle in many, many years, and we're definitely there. And sometimes you're not quite sure what it means or where it's all going to lead. What might be the ultimate outcome, you know, of all of this? But 33 years and having not seen this level of vitriol and upheaval, that's saying a lot.
That's saying a lot. It's It's interesting to me because I remember back in 98 when the Klan came here. And there was a lot of confusion. There was a lot of confusion with African-American officers. Were they even going to work it? We thought that there may be a lot of negative things that would come out of that because of the African-American community and the Klansmen and so forth. But even that didn't produce anywhere in the neighborhood of what we're seeing now. Even Rodney King, to be honest, was totally egregious what happened, but it did not spur the reaction that we're seeing that's happening across the country now. And it's one of the worst things I think I've seen in law enforcement, the travesty of how they beat him and what they did. But even that did not spur the nationwide reactions of the things that we're seeing now.
But Pastor Vince, I am once again, as Pastor Todd said, we've seen this and we're watching it. We're watching it unfold. And one of the problems that I know that I'm having, as well as many Black Americans are having, is you watch, obviously, social media is very big on all these things. And for me, it seems like a lot of the grievances that our Black people are dealing with, minorities in general are dealing with, is the fact that they're telling us just move on, let it go, stop marching, or go home. You shouldn't be out there. Yeah. I think, you know, I personally, I have, and I mean, like Pastor Todd said, I'm not talking about those who are just out there to try to get some new converts. I'm talking about those who have a general respect for movement that, you know, we really want to see change. Right. And matter of fact, I had, my wife had a friend on her Facebook page, I think it was, that just said, well, shoot one of them and all the rest of them will go home.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's as a pastor, as a police officer, what do you say about that?
Well, number one, if you got a reason to march, march. If you got a reason to protest, protest. That's a right that's been given. I had a conversation with some people recently when they were talking about, and a lot of people are upset with the NBA players, and it's specifically LeBron James.
Right.
They have a problem with them wearing Black Lives Matters on their shirt. Having the other things on their shirt. Listen, if you've never been in my shoes, then you can't understand why I do what I do. Let me share this with you. I think it was the shooting of Castillo. I happened to be sitting, I was sitting on the floor. My son was in here and my wife was in here. And I saw the shooting on the news. And I immediately became enraged. I became so enraged that I started crying. And then it was kind of one of those Cuba Gooding Jr. moments in, what's that show with Doughboy, Boys in the Hood?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Fighting the air. I had one of those moments. I just freaked out. And I can remember, and it still makes me emotional. I can remember looking at my son. He just broke out crying. I think Vinny was, it was right before he was getting married, so 21, 22. And I ended up just going to get in my truck and leaving.
I want to just reiterate, Pastor Jeff, what Pastor Vince was talking about. He was basically saying that it is our God-given right to march if you have a viable and justifiable reason. And that we all, you know, he mentioned Philando Castile and how he and his son both heavily upset. And I, towards the end, I thought I heard him saying, that marching is the peaceful means that we have. Marching and protesting. And there will always be tense elements, you know, that go along with protesting. Whenever you get a mass of people, you know, you're going to get bad behavior.
Absolutely.
And I, people talk about riots, and that is very real. There are people who want to bring you know, confusion to the cause. Let me type this comment. Just want them to know that Pastor Vince is coming back. But, you know, that all, it happens after somebody wins a championship game.
Right.
Okay. You know, when these hockey players, you know, the fans are out there, you know, throwing over cars and all. Nobody's saying go out there and shoot them. Nobody's saying go out there and take those thugs out. But I appreciate that even as an officer, he's still a man and a black man that feels the pain of injustice. Right. Now, I think it's important to note that he mentioned Philando Castile, and we're bringing Pastor Vince back in, but I think he's muted, so we want to make sure he's unmuted. I see the mute symbol by him, so let's make sure he's unmuted. He might be getting his audio together. But he mentioned Philando Castile, Pastor Jeff, and let's just be honest, every situation is not a Philando Castile situation.
Right, right.
Every situation may not be a George Floyd situation. And a lot of people, when we got upset and we did speak our opinions about Shaq and Charles Barkley the other week with Reverend Thornton and Dr. Woodbury about how maybe you should keep some comments to yourself, even if there are some discrepancies. But the fact of the matter is, once they begin to snowball and be lumped together, and I do want to ask Pastor Vince about this when he's ready to come back on. Once these things begin to snowball, and I've had some white and black friends who have said, well, don't lump this one into that group because, you know, he reached for the officer's gun, or this one is different, or, you know, the Michael Brown story has more to it, or what have you. And that may be true. There are always going to be discrepancies between stories. But I think the overall narrative is that African-American men and women are far more likely proportionally, not in flat numbers necessarily, because we're only 13% of the population, but proportionally more likely to have these deadly encounters with police. And so
I mean, I totally understand what you're saying. And like you said, every story is different. But I mean, if you read every one of the Gospels, Matthew, Luke, Mark, and John, they're all different. The point is that Jesus ended up dying.
Right. So the point is, he ended up dying.
I mean, so, you know, you can find little intricate details in every single story. But I mean, like you said, the overall overwhelming point is that, you know, we are dying at a stupendous rate that just doesn't, you know, that, you know, we, and I think, you know, somebody, like you said, you know, this is the peaceful means. And I think it's good that we're doing a peaceful means because it can go a whole different way.
Yeah. And it might. And, you know, the funny thing that I feel like I'm seeing, and we'll take a quick pause and do some, you know, announcements just to give Vince some time to come back. But something I'm seeing is that I feel, and I've been trying to look, and I think it's God even impressing it upon my heart, to look at what America is going through a broader lens and kind of removing that sense of exceptionalism that we have carried and that some of our fellow citizens really cling to, that we are different, we are exceptional. What I'm seeing is as a sense of upheaval that very possibly doesn't have to be complete revolution or anything. Doesn't have to be violent overthrow. But I think we have often looked at other countries, other places as having upheaval and dissension and division and sectarianism, as they call it. And nobody's immune to that. Nobody is immune. I mean, I know we've always felt like, well, we always come out on top, democratic, whatever, but everybody reaches a boiling point somewhere. You don't know exactly where it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just concerned, and if Pastor Vince, if you're ready to come back in, give us a thumbs up so we'll know. When you're ready, he'll give us a thumbs up because we can see him. You guys cannot. But one of the things that I want to ask Pastor Vince about when he does come back is not just the protests and the concerns for police brutality, but the backlash, as he said, the widening gaps in division. Now you have the other side, the blue, the militias. Right. I personally was very disturbed by the militiamen who showed up in Warren when we were doing the peaceful march, talking about they're there to guard, you know, monuments.
Right.
They're there to guard monuments. It makes you question because, number one, Warren is not necessarily known for Confederate monuments. Like, you know, we don't have a statue of Jefferson Davis you know, downtown. But they were allowed to stand there with guns.
Oh, and right.
That's a recipe, as we've seen around the country, for these tensions. So I want to ask him about that when he's able to come back. Pastor Vince, if you can hear us, if you can give us a thumbs up, if you're ready, when you're ready, we'll just watch out for you.
We can do those announcements, right? You know, now I don't know the numbers, but I would almost venture to say that there is an alarming rate of African Americans who have never or would have never thought about getting their gun license now obtaining them. I was.
I'm one of them. I'm one of them. Okay, amen. Pastor Vince is ready to come back in, Big Mike. So if we can bring Pastor Vince back in. We did catch the gist of what you were talking about before you went off, Pastor Vince. So we didn't lose you completely, but we just knew it was going to freeze, and it did. But as Pastor Vince was speaking earlier, what we see, as Pastor Jeff was originally asking, is the attempt to change or stifle the narrative. And a lot of times that comes from what's comfortable, because people don't want to deal with it. Now, I have a question, Pastor Vince. Okay. We were talking a little bit about the backlash. Now you've got the white militias, the back to blue. You've got, you know, kind of, like you said, the widening gap now. People are threatening, making the comments that Jeff mentioned on Facebook, but some of them are threatening to carry them out. Do you even feel we are still in a realm of conversation and dialogue, or does something, or are we more, and I hate to use this word to sound radical, but are we more in revolutionary mode where you just have to kind of see where the flow goes? Is there really opportunity for dialogue, and think pastorally and from a police perspective?
I think from a pastoral perspective, yes, there's room for dialogue. The meeting I was, the conversation I was having today, the panel I was on in PA, was at a predominantly white church. White pastor initiated it. And it was, the conversation was pretty deep. I'm always the one, you know, I'm going to tell you what I think, what I feel, according to the word of God, what God expects from us. I'm always trying to see this from God's perspective. You guys forgive me for, because I got to hold this right now.
It's okay.
But so I had a very frank conversation, some very frank dialogue to get an understanding. I think what is missing, listen, I don't expect people to understand where I've been and what I've experienced in my life. If you've never experienced racism, if you've never had to go through that or prejudice behavior, I don't expect you to necessarily understand, but I do expect you to respect what I'm telling you and give it some value, especially those who know me. I've experienced racism for years. It's nothing new to me. Now, am I going to crying about it all the time about this and that? No. I don't cry about it to the public. I don't cry about it to other people. I will talk to the people that I think are doing it. And so when I'm sharing with you that this stuff is real, that I've experienced it, that my wife, my children have experienced it, I expect you to listen and at least give it some credibility if you say that you know me, that you are my friend. Right. Don't dismiss what I'm saying. So I do think there is the possibility within the God, the God realm, the church realm, because I do believe, and I've had some conversations with some pastors who want to have some sincere dialogue. I'm not talking about dialogue where you want to skew it and we want to just kind of sweep it up under the rug as if it's not here. I shared this with them today. If we would have paid attention 20 years ago, God was showing us that we had some issues. When O.J. Simpson's trial came up, that trial did not become about right or wrong. It became about black or white.
Absolutely.
And I know, right. I know that, because honestly, I thought O.J. was guilty. But as a black man, and having seen some of the things that I've seen that I thought were wrong, I just wanted to see him get off. Now, from a God's perspective, was that right? And God came back and convicted me of that later on. But we had issues that were showing, and even when I would have dialogue with people, and I became very honest probably a couple of years after that, I said, listen, this really was not about right or wrong. It was about black or white. A lot of people wanted to dismiss that, but you have never seen this country polarize to the level it was 20 years, I mean, like it was back then.
Yeah.
You know, well, people crying because OJ was found not guilty.
Yeah.
We got a whole lot of people that were guilty found not guilty.
Absolutely. Right. Well,
so from a Christian perspective, I truly believe that we have the opportunity. I think God is pushing us to it. I think sometimes that we put a Band-Aid on the bullet wound, and eventually that Band-Aid is not going to be able to cover that bullet wound. So I think God is pushing us to a scenario that the only way we're going to resolve this is by sitting down and coming with an honest and true conversation about it.
Let me switch gears a little bit. And I want Mike to put that question back up that Jeanette left. And because this is the question, we're going to talk a little bit about policy and training. And it was asked if more young men and women of color sought out careers in law enforcement, which, of course, you know a lot about being a person of color in law enforcement. And so this is a question from an audience member. Then I'm going to give you a question. Do you feel that would be helpful? If we had more officers of color, things would or could be more controllable. That's what her question was.
Number one, it helps to a degree, but I think it has to be the right officers. And, you know, unfortunately, being in this field in this day and age is a very tricky situation. You're going to have people who are very strong in what they believe, have a strong moral foundation. And they're also going to have to be willing to take a little heat sometime. But I do believe if we have good minorities in these positions, I do think it will help to a degree, because sometimes people just feel comfortable seeing people that they can identify with in some form or fashion. Okay. And so if you can put the right, and I got a young man who played on my football team, and I encouraged him, listen, you know, you're in criminal justice, law enforcement is a good field to get into. And fortunately for us, he did. There's a young lady who's a great athlete in Youngstown. I met her the other day at a training I was doing. And this young lady just got great people skills. She'll be able to function in any world, in any generation, in any ethnic group that she's in. So yeah, I do think that would help kind of move things forward and create stronger relationships. But for those who are not minorities, I still think you have to be trained in dealing with minorities. And that's one of the things we do. We have a program called the New Jack Officer, which is based off of, I took the title from New Jack City, where he said we need a New Jack officer to take down a New Jack gangster. It simply means we can't operate the same. And so we train officers how to deal with our African-American males, because we do bring some uniqueness to the table. We're different. And if you don't know how to talk to us and deal with us, you take something from a firecracker to an explosive.
Now, Vince, before I open it up for Jeff, can I just ask you a question? Yes. Does it make you sad that you have to explain to cadets what New Jack City is? does it do something to you?
I'm going to tell you now, it makes me feel old. it makes me feel old. And it's funny because I just did a training for the Mahoning County Sheriff's Department. Uh-huh. 40 of their supervisors. And it's funny, all the guys, and most of them were Caucasian, they knew what New Jack City was. But I had one young dude in there, he looked at me like, so what movie is this?
Right.
And I'm like, son, I know you're under 30, yeah.
Right.
And we was all serious, we was all good. I'm like ready to jump on a piggyback on this, and we didn't do the joke in there.
Broke it up. All right, Pastor Jeff, what you got?
No, just real quick, And just to piggyback off what you were saying, and as I talk to a lot of these young brothers out here in the streets, and I find that they have actually made or have titled what we call police as the enemy, as the enemy. And so how hard is it to protect and serve a people who looks at you as the enemy?
Jeff, that's a great question, man, because it's something. The thing is, here in the area, because in Trumbull County, there are not a lot of minority officers. And to be honest, I kind of stand out because I'm pretty active, you know, right. having worked drug task force, being on the U.S. Marshals, hostage negotiator. So I stand out.
It's the head, dog. It's the head. It's the head.
See, there you go. See? Wait a minute. So my son is going to see.
I know he is. I know Vinny's coming in. I know.
No.
Thank you for pulling him away, Vinny. We appreciate you. You just saved the whole podcast.
Mega mind over there.
Listen, I'm chopping all this junk through a screen. You know how nice I'm going to be when I see him?
Right.
But no, you said they see you as the enemy, you know, and go keep going. You stand out.
It's very difficult. You know, you have to learn to deal with it. You know, I've been places where I didn't even know people, but because you've arrested their family, you know, my mom, it was funny that my mom and my wife were sitting at a banquet and I walked in a little late and the one lady must have said, I can't stand him. And my wife happened to look over and she saw me walking in and she was like, who are you talking about? She's like, him. And you got to know my wife. You know, my wife is a first lady, but she's also Eastside Ev.
Yeah, and, yeah.
So when that
happened, my wife would get along well.
So when that, you know, when that happened, it kind of set some things off. But, you know, at times it can be very difficult. It was a struggle early in my career. I had a situation that involved someone I knew very well that was involved in a homicide, and the information ended up coming to me. I ended up interrogating them and got a confession, and it caused some friction with a family that I was very close with. And so for a while, I was kind of in a tailspin. I didn't want to be involved in too much at all. And what happened was I had helped a minister friend from Youngstown. His son got in trouble. And I helped his son out of trouble. And we were walking down the hallway. And he said, man, this is a great ministry that God has given you. I'm like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And he said, this job you're doing, it's a great ministry. And so what happened was God changed my mindset from this being a job to actually it was an opportunity to be able to impact people. And so I go out of my way. I'm a public relations individual. I'm going to do my job regardless. But I also go out of my way to try to bridge gaps. And the crazy thing about it is some of the bad guys that act like they don't like me are some of the same bad guys that do like me, because they know this about me. I'm not going to beat you. I'm not taking your dope. I'm not taking your money. If you're doing wrong, you're going to go to jail. But if you're respectful, wherever I see you, I'm going to respect you. And if I can, because no matter whether I carry a badge or a gun, the gospel is still in me. So I've been a part of drug raids, and then I got the dude in the room and I'm sharing Christ with him and everybody else looking at me like I'm crazy. It must be a calling in order to be effective in what you do. And of course, like I said, it's, you know, you take some hits. My kids are taking hits because of it. I've had threats before. But yet I trust the process of God that he put me in this preacher, probation, police role.
Yeah. Well, I'd listen to your sermons if you had a gun, too. So
you ought to see the collection, please.
Yeah. Listen, Pastor Vince's offerings are never low. We have another audience question, and then I have a question, if you don't mind, Pastor Jeff. The audience question, our viewer question, comes from Sister Josie, who goes to Second Baptist. She says, as a law enforcement officer, do you feel some people show you disrespect by overlooking you as a pastor because they see Officer Vince first and they don't always see Pastor Vince?
You know, it's for me, Sister Josie, I really don't even worry about the title. You know, you can call me Vince. You can call me Vinny. In fact, your brother calls me Big Grease. You know what? I should not have told y'all that. I should not have told y'all that. But
I can't wait.
Jeff calls me. That's my nickname from back in the day. But you know, I don't lose sleep over that, because ultimately my goal is to share the gospel. And I can do it whether you call me Pastor Vince or Minister Vince or whatever it may be, Officer Vince, or just call me Vince. I don't get offended by that.
I appreciate that. My question is, jumping back to what you talked about with the training, the New Jack training and just police training, and I was blessed to be a part of what many community members, or some I should say, have been able to kind of interact with police, see how their jobs work. We've done that. And Pastor Peterson, you and I have sat in many rooms with Warren police officers. We've been through this dialogue cycle many mm-hmm. times. Pastor Jeff being in Warren with us now, I can't wait to see him get involved. A part of my mind and heart, even after my wonderful experience a few weeks ago, which it was bad timing because it was literally the day after the Breonna Taylor, you know, the decision and all of that. But in my mind, I'm not so sure if we are not working under maybe antiquated. And I know it's updated. I know it's been updated over the years. But I think the overall philosophy and training of policing molds the minds of officers. And of course, I went through some scenarios, so I know a lot of it seemed to be geared towards worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think that the worst case scenario sometimes drives officers in tense situations to wow. respond in ways that might not necessarily have, you know, of course, hindsight's 20/20. I took a bullet to the chest, you know, not responding quick enough. So yes, the worst case has and does happen at times, but do you feel that that worst case, protect at all costs, preserve life at all costs, sometimes works on the minds of some of these officers? And I'll say, you know, black or white, but especially knowing that black people are often seen as more of a threat, like because of the distinctions that you mentioned, maybe it's loudness, maybe it's aggressive, you know, appearance or perception. Do you think that that worst case, protect at all costs, you know, kill them to their dead kind of thing, kind of has played or contributed to some of these activities?
I think with some people it can. I think with probably the majority of officers, not, but there are that minority who look at everything from that perspective and don't get an overall big picture. You know, I came close maybe once to hurting someone during the course of my job. But I'm very cautious of when I pull that weapon. If I pull that weapon, I am feeling threatened in some form or fashion, or it's just a part where I anticipate, you know, on a drug raid, you don't know, you anticipate something is going to happen. I do think because, 5 or 6 years ago, I was on Attorney DeWine's committee. There was about 18 of us from across the state to look at police reform. And that was really when things had begun to happen. There had been some shootings with African-American. And one of my, the big thing is as you're talking about, was let's put more focus on how to de-escalate the situations we're dealing with. Because I really do believe when the Bible talks about the power of the tongue, I believe in the power of the tongue. That's one of the reasons, not fully reason why I'm a negotiator, because my knees is too old to run on the SWAT team like I used to.
You ain't chasing nobody.
But I'm gonna be honest, transparent. But really the ability to be able to diffuse by being able to talk people down is the biggest gift that any law enforcement officer has. And so my thinking is, let's put some training on that, and then let's be real. We have to be real. I just had a conversation with a friend of mine that I talked to you about on the 29th. You'll get to meet, mm-hmm. who is the new director for police diversity and recruiting. And I believe that the friction between the African-American male, and I'm looking predominantly at the males, not excluding the females, but that's the most interaction. And law enforcement, I always say this, Black Lives Matter, then police are saying Blue Lives Matter, and if we don't find a way to fix it, we all gonna be black and blue. So let's focus, because it is a problem right now, let's focus on how do we deal with the African-American male? What are the things that they do, how they feel, how they react, that you may perceive as a precipitator to something happening when really it's not. It's just them expressing themselves. What language can I use? How can I talk to them? What places can I go that might, you know, we always talk about, I talk about the Black Man's Country Club. Do you guys know what the Black Man's Country Club is? I know you do. It's the barbershop.
That's
Let
it.
Let me meet. So I tell officers, go into the barbershop, just a dialogue. You know, we had a couple of guys would come into my barbershop and talk. You guys know Cheese. Everybody talks to Cheese.
Right.
And
right.
Cheese gonna tell you what's real. That right. dialogue helped create relationships because they saw law enforcement in a non-adversarial atmosphere. So right. yeah, I do think that's a great question. I do think that can kind of play a factor for those who really don't understand what their responsibility is. I do.
Real quick, I see Pastor Harrison has a question. Real quick, a statement and a question. I have always watched all the stuff that's going on. One of the things that I see is that a lot of these guys are becoming self-proclaimed lawyers now, mm-hmm. where all of a sudden they know the law. You know, they're going out finding out questions. You can't stop me. You can't answer this. You can't. And so it almost becomes this tug of war. And so in a lot of cases, at least what I see on social media, obviously I'm not out there. I'm not a police officer. But in a lot of cases, they know at least enough to fool or make the officer look foolish, right. which in turn makes them look mad. So I guess my question is,
yeah.
in that aspect, what is the training of these officers long enough, in your opinion? I mean, to become a police officer, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's 6 months, a year, whatever it is. And I know that there's, and as in any other profession, there's ongoing training. But the initial training before these police officers get on the street, in your opinion, is that long enough?
Wow, y'all asking some really good questions here.
We're coming after you, bro.
I think when we're looking at it now, I'm thinking that the training needs to be longer. I think we are seeing some deficiencies in law enforcement training, better educating our officers on what they can and cannot do. I do see that they're going to be people, and I'll be honest, who will take advantage of this if you don't know and unsure of yourself. Yeah. I know what the law is. I know what is required. So you can challenge me all you want, but I'm going to execute what I know. I think when you're dealing with young people who are, and a lot of these are young people coming out of the academy who are not sure of themselves and who are challenged, then they begin to doubt their own selves. Wait a minute, did it really say that? Because you gotta understand, there's some guys out here can make you believe you ain't black. They can tell you ain't black. You know, you like, am I black? Right. No, maybe I ain't black. So in answering that question, my personal opinion, I really do believe that the academy needs, probably could be longer. And my basic opinion is it needs to be more scenario-based. When you come to our training, I'm going to give you the stuff that you need. But then guess what? We're actually going to put you in role play, and you're going to execute it. And right. what we do is I let you know, I'm going to tell you, well, no, because if you did this, this is what's going to happen. Now, if you do well, you know, that's good. That means you understood the concept of what we talked about. But even back when we were 5 or 6 years ago, that was one of the things we tried to push. They did extend the hours, but not to the depth that I think they may need to extend. And I think now, even with all the issues, they're seeing that maybe we need to help these officers out by training them a little longer.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk about those scenarios. Mm-hmm. One thing that we've seen a lot, and again, I got a chance to experience the idea of walking into tense situations, uncertain situations, the noise, the clamor that goes along. But a lot of what we have seen on social media, and they may be isolated, but they definitely blow up, are officers who escalate what starts off as conversation, mm-hmm. it, walking up on someone's porch or knocking on their door, a call of a report of somebody doing something. And there are two, and I want to kind of ask you from the pastoral side that might, who knows, delay, you know, deny the policeman side. There are two main charges or issues that have become almost like a coverall for escalating or justifying escalated behavior. And the first one is failure to comply. Mm-hmm. And the second is resisting arrest.
Okay.
And on both of those, on the failure to comply, it appears, and I'm not saying officers do this all the time, but there could be a notion that an officer could walk up to me in my yard and begin to ask me questions and ask me for my license or tell me they got a call about something. And if I begin to agitate or not cooperate, that begins to escalate. You know, I'm calling for backup. This and it's happened. This has literally happened to people just standing on the street, on their own front porch, knocking on the door. We have to ask you questions and you have to answer them. And if not, now it becomes, you need to do this next thing. You need to do this next thing. And if you don't, it's resisting. And I want to just jump into resisting so you can answer all of it at one time. Mm-hmm. As a pastor, and this has been grieving my heart, it feels like we dehumanize the very human spirit when we act as if the human body is made to submit to an aggressive action by another human, regardless of badge, regardless of authority. We've watched the tasings. We've watched even the shootings, the wrestling, the punchings, the subduing. Mm-hmm. And I know that these are approved strikes. I know that these are supposed to help to subdue blows to the back of the head, the shoulder, whatever they're supposed to be. But if a man, you're a man, somebody, regardless of their authority or badge or whatever, begins to rough handle you, your body is going to react almost like you would blink or swallow.
Right.
And I feel like a part of training, and I don't know, but it doesn't feel like in the moment that's taken into account.
I'm so glad you said that, because I'm going to go back to our training, and I totally agree. I always share in the training, like I said, the one we just had a week or so ago, always sharing the training that as an African-American male, my father, who was a great man, eighth grade education, but one of the smartest men I ever knew. And my dad always, and I'm sure your fathers did too, my dad always said, I pay the bills in this house, you're going to respect. Everybody here better respect me. And so I shared with police officers, as African-American males, we've been taught that we are men of our house. So
yes.
If I'm arguing with my wife and you get a call that I'm arguing with my wife and you come to my house and you come in and tell me to sit down and shut up, 95% of the time, I'm probably going to jail, because I'm the man of my house and she don't get to disrespect me. And you, well, she get to disrespect me because she listening. So
right.
I didn't mean that, babe. And you do not get to disrespect me.
Right.
So when you come into an African-American male's house, you have to give them that level of respect. We are what we call in the training spiritual people. Not spiritual in the sense of what we're saying religious. We're saying spiritual in the sense of we have to connect with you. That's why you always hear us say, well, can you feel me? Can you feel me says, are we connecting in some form or fashion? Now, if I can connect with you on the respect level, give you that respect, talk to you in a tone that indicates respect, then you're probably going to yield the best harvest from me.
Yeah.
This is why one of the reasons, once again, that we want to train officers. And one of the things that came up when I was in Columbus on this committee, well, you know, we have to be careful that we just don't pick one ethnic group to train on. But hold up, what ethnic group are you having the problems with? Who's getting shot? Who's having the issues?
Yeah.
So for that reason, okay, we need to deal with this. And then if something else pops up, then we can talk about dealing with this. So, you know, I do think those things are escalated and elevated simply because on a lot of occasions, they don't know how to diffuse it.
Yeah.
And their misconception, or for some of them, for some officers, and that's, and here's the crazy thing is, it's black officers as well as white officers.
Right.
I tell people, right, don't think because a person is black that they understand everything that goes on in this culture. When we did this training in Columbus, I had a brother come to me after the class, and he said, man, I got to be honest with you. He said, when I took this class, I'm thinking, what is these brothers going to tell me about being black? He said, then when I took the class, he was like, wow, this is deep.
Yeah.
Because it speaks on a whole nother level. So I think that there has to be some strong training so you understand the things that trigger. If me, you, and Jeff are in a room, now we talking sports, pretty soon the conversation is going to get loud.
Absolutely.
We always tell, in the African-American culture, the fight is not getting ready to break out when we screaming and yelling.
Oh, no.
It's when we take a step towards you, mm-hmm, that we believe this is moving to, that's when you need to be concerned. As
right,
long as I'm up there screaming and crying and talking loud, you know, it's kind of like talking loud and saying nothing. Now, when I make a move towards you, that's the other concept, that something, yeah, sure, is going to happen.
I'm about
but
to get
there has to be training and education in that, right, area.
Right.
Mike, Todd, listen, we have some phenomenal questions.
Yeah, let's read these.
We got to do rapid fire on these phenomenal questions, Mac. I know you just said there is no rapid fire, but I think we need to hit some of these and at least allow Vince time to answer some of them, maybe, you know, as succinctly as possible as you can, Pastor Vince. I mean, these are some phenomenal questions. And I don't want people to leave thinking they didn't get their questions answered.
Go ahead.
Right. What I was saying about no rapid fire, I meant as far as me asking questions and breaking up the whole,
okay,
interview, right, here, man, because this is too good, man. This is too good to watch like that. One question right here from Janet McFadden I thought was real good. Are young black men killing each other? Does that show others that we don't care about each other? So why should they? Just kind of thinking out loud, but I thought it was kind of a good.
Do you know of some officers who carry that mentality that because some people don't show concern for each other, why should I?
I'm sure there probably are. You got to understand my circle because of who I am. I surround myself with people who are compassionate. I can tell you this, if they think it, they certainly would not tell it to me because I'm going to have a real, real, in fact, the fact that the question is asked and I'm thinking about it right now, I get angry even thinking that an officer would think like that. I don't care if they don't care about themselves. Some people are in a position because they feel as if they have no value. Now, I'm not justifying what they do. So I feel that in some form or fashion, maybe I can reach them. Maybe I can touch them in some form or fashion. But officers feeling the same way, I'm sure, keeping it 100, there are probably awesome officers who feel like that, but it would behoove them not to express that to me.
Good, good. Let's hit another one.
Go ahead, Pastor
Harrison, I want to hit President Harrison because we can't say no to the president because the Archbishop.
Yeah, I better hit my wife. I got to go to bed.
Right. Okay. So thank you, Pastor Harrison, for being on with us. First of all, we always appreciate you. He had two questions about, one about recruitment and one about diversity.
Okay.
Is pay an issue in black recruitment?
I believe it is. I think it's an issue in recruitment, period. Now, Youngstown and Warren, I think Warren plays a little better than Youngstown. But now if you go to Akron, they're paying $46,000 to $49,000 to start off. So you imagine, you know, being 23, 24,
I'll be back. I gotta go.
Is that on indeedjobs.com?
Listen, where is that at?
By the way, you would actually, no joke, the conversation was you and Vinny would actually make good police officers. Just so I want to throw that out there to you.
I need to find out if I'm too old because I'm about to take the test or something. I'm about to find it hard out here.
But yeah, I do think that is an issue, especially with what an African-American male, because here's the thing, you know, in today's society, you're called a sellout, you're called Uncle Tom, and that's a lot of weight on a young person, male or female, to almost feel you're trying to do something positive, but you're being ostracized and you get very little pay for it.
Yeah. So I mean, you got to go out and like rap and dunk on somebody every day just to get respect in the hood with an officer. President Harrison also asked, 45, we all heard about him eliminating diversity training at the federal level. Is that a problem? And I guess I would ask, is that affecting you all in any way?
Listen, so you've got a cancer problem in your hospital, but yet you decide you're going to do away with the oncology problem.
Hmm.
That it makes no sense. You know, and I believe that the president is just kind of saying, well, law enforcement doesn't need any training. And I'm not trying to be political in any form or fashion, but I think he's trying to speak a language that the people need to deal with the issues. You know, I've had officers who have asked, when we did the training, well, do you train the community? And I say, yeah, actually I have. I've been in the schools with different people, and Pastor Todd, you and I have worked on things. Yep. Yeah, I do train the community, but here's the thing. You're the professional.
Right.
Yes, sir.
You have certain expectations. And so with that, you need the training, because ultimately the responsibility is going to fall on you. So, right. I'm really interested into why he did that, because in reality, it makes no real sense. You have a worldwide issue, and yet you decide that you're going to decimate the necessary training that officers would need.
Wow. You want to hit the next one, Pastor Jeff?
It says, how long does police reform take in regards to implementing any new policy, and when do you actually see the effect of it?
And Pastor Ben, could you give us an example of something you might have seen one time that, you know, a new policy went and what it looked like, or, you know, how quick it switched over? Because I like that question.
To be honest, that's a very difficult question for me to answer, because I can't really look back on policy and say when, you know, when, like, well, let me go back. Yes, I can. Because even when we did the police reform back in 2015, 2016, there was a change within the police academy, which added additional training in areas such as cultural diversity, and which was good. We wanted that particular thing. So that happened probably within 6 to 8 months after we all met and came to a conclusion, presented a report to, he was then Attorney General DeWine, and he then presented it to Governor Kasich. But there are so many other aspects that need to be changed. And the problem is, a lot of times it's a slow process. So really what you need is, you need not something, it's good to have it legislated, but you need police departments and chiefs and sheriffs who are willing to implement those changes now. They don't have to go through all the channels. They don't have to hear from this group and from this group. They see a need, and they're able to make and change those policies and create certain types of training to meet the needs that they see fit without going through and having to jump through hoops.
That's interesting to hear. And I'm going to ask, have Pastor Jeff read his wife's question, but I want to mention that, you know what changed the policies, and I'm sure it didn't change all policies real quick, but when COVID hit, you know, just the, at least in the initial months, and there was one funny video on Facebook of an officer, and he might not even been a real officer, but he was watching people go by. He was like, I'm not pulling him over. It ain't worth it. That car looks like it has the Rona.
But that's true. There were a lot. There were a lot of interactions. I think the state patrol wasn't pulling over a whole lot of people because of the COVID experience. So
right, but it kind of sort of proved it could be done. Not to say it wouldn't have ramifications or consequences. You know, upticks in certain areas. But they did it once the masks, you know, weren't on. You know, they made sure. Pastor Jeff, we don't want you to sleep on the floor. So
amen, amen. This is from my wife. Is the mental evaluation sufficient enough? Are officers pushed to see if they have anger issues?
That's a good one.
We can always be more in depth in those areas. However, it doesn't matter how in depth you are. There are always going to be people who are going to slide up under the radar. I think for a lot of people, because of things that are happening, and I know police departments who have dismissed people because they did not pass their psych evaluation. But like anything else, it can be more in depth. You can take a better examination, but you're always going to get those people who slide under the radar. And unfortunately, they get in, and a lot of times they can be the bad apple that kind of spoils the whole bunch.
And people snap. They could have not had an anger issue.
Yes.
But as President Harrison says, he got anger issues.
Hey, before we go, because I know we got to get out of here. I know you got to get to work, Mike. I got one quick rapid fire question for you, Pastor Vince. One question for you.
Uh-oh.
Is you a wheat or is you a wolf or a sheep? Is you a wolf or a sheep, baby? My ninja. My ninja.
I knew it was coming.
My son over here cracking up, man.
Tell you story.
My son over here cracking up.
I knew it was coming.
Tell me a story.
Take your phone.
You been watching way too much.
Okay, I do have one last rapid fire. And that is, Pastor Vince, what do you think of all of these officers who have walked off the job, purposely called in sick, expressed that, you know, if you all going to protest us and exhibit anger, then we're not going to protect you?
Well, here's the bottom line. I go back to realizing that this is a ministry for me. And, you know, I think there are a lot of officers who are scared. And when I say scared, they don't want to be sued. They don't want to be on TV and CNN and all of those different dynamics. But I can't take away somebody's God-given right to protest. Now, do I think at times police have been thrown into one pot? Yes. Do I think Black people have been thrown into one pot? Yes. So I think, you know, for those officers who say we're going to walk off, we're going to call in sick, to me, you know, it's a coward's way out. We're going to have to deal with this head on. We're going to have to conversate, dialogue, walking out, running out, hiding, ducking is not going to do anything to resolve this problem. I've never, you know, my daughter would always tell me, I always tell my kids, when you see a fight, go the opposite way. And so when I would go to work, my daughter would come and she'd say, "Hey, Dad, when a fight break out, what you gonna do?" I said, "I'm gonna run to it." She said, "No, you're supposed to go the opposite way." But as law enforcement officers, we have a different assignment.
Right.
We have a different assignment. And so just because we don't like it, because we don't agree with certain things, we are required to maintain and do and execute our job. Just as we are as preachers,
right,
in season and out of season.
When
they don't like it, when they want to hear it, and when they don't want to hear it. We are mandated by God to follow through and do what we've been called to do.
Well, we appreciate it, Pastor Vince. So I mean, this has been enlightening and encouraging, challenging. You know, we've run a full gamut in a small amount of time, and I think it's been very informative. We know we will have more questions come in. We cannot answer all of them, but we might be following up with this if we still have a country on November 4th. If we still have a nation. Otherwise, I don't know. I guess you can meet me in the Democratic State of America or whatever it's going to be called in about 90 days. But Big Mike, you got anything else before we close out?
Yeah, Pastor Vince, we got to have you back, man.
I appreciate y'all having me. I appreciate the lightheartedness you have. Okay, listen, my son wants me to say I appreciate him for coming and setting the camera up.
Thank you, Vinny. Thank you, Vinny.
You're the MVP.
Upgrade that Wi-Fi for next time.
He's talking about get the real Vince Peterson on.
Listen, listen, we all know. Hey, I know what it's like. We got to take that mantle by force. I go to my dad's house and just start taking stuff off the wall. I want my heritage.
Honestly, I love y'all brothers. I appreciate, and I really, really appreciate the questioning because it's going to make me go back and kind of dialogue on some things that come out of this. But I appreciate you brothers having me on. It's been great. Conversation has been great. Y'all got some good jokes. Cowboys. But once again, I love you brothers and truly appreciate you.
All right.
Take care, man.
So, Big Mike, we appreciate you. Thank you to all of you who watched. We usually close out before we go. Of course, we don't begin with prayer or end with prayer, but we do want to remind everybody to be prayerful and go vote. Vote your convictions, what you believe in, and continue to be involved in the process. I know what it's like to get so frustrated, and I might get there again. It's okay. You're human, where you just detach for a minute. Sometimes that's healthy for you. You need to stop thinking about it, you know, worrying about it. Get away for a minute. God will let you know when it's time to get back in the fight or jump back into the effort. If you have not done so, please like us at Religiously Incorrect Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, our audio feed. And we had a little, just interruption, but we're going to edit that out and make sure that we put the show together and have it ready to go onto our audio feed. So we appreciate all of our followers. We appreciate everybody. We have a special opportunity for all of our viewers. We have half off Religiously Incorrect Podcast t-shirts. You go to religiouslyincorrectpodcast.com. So if you're trying to get Christmas gifts, Benny, for the whole family,
we got stuff for the grandbaby and everything.
Yeah, the baby, everybody, onesies, all that. And listen, right where the baby is always making boo-boo, I want you to put real, raw, and uncut.
Or you could just put Pittsburgh. It don't matter. One or the other. Still inside. Listen, Sister Anissa, thank you for the comment or for the statistics you posted up earlier. Real great statistics. Just to let you know that myself and Pastor Todd, we're going to go together to get our gun license. So that'll be two more on them. We're going to go together. We're going to try to see if we can shoot each other.
We both going to be in the hospital calling Vince, like, come pray for us.
All my board meetings, put my gun out on the table.
Hey, Jeff, when I went to Alabama and I was shooting them rifles, I sent that back to my head deacon. I said, I'm ready.
I got the video. I'm going to send you the video. We were shooting guns down there. I'm going to send you the video. We had a great time.
It's been a great night. We don't want to keep everybody. We got to go. Mike's got to go to work. I know who ain't going to work. And
just going to say that on live, huh? Just all out there in the air, huh? Just everywhere.
We'll delete it. Hey, we love everybody. We thank you for following. We thank Pastor Vince for being with us. Mike, go ahead and hit that outro. We'll see y'all next time.
Peace out. Peace out.